You're listening to the Hollywood Boulevard Podcast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Hollywood Boulevard Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody. And as always, I've got my co-host here. How are you doing, Alfred Crane?
Doing wonderful, Jonathan. Good to see you. Good to be on today.
Good to see you, too. And please introduce your guest. You brought a guest here with us today.
I did. I met Rob at the Push Comedy Theater in Norfolk, Virginia, and he was in the 666 show last year, which is a horror of six movies, six actors, six directors, and since then I got to know him, and now we're on a sketch comedy team called Charged Particles, where we've really gotten to work with each other creatively. We're collaborating on Neon Squares, which is a version of Hollywood Squares that's updated. He's a fellow big time horror guy. We talk a lot about The Thing, and he's a big H.P. Lovecraft guy, and I could think of no better person to talk about Color Out of Space than my friend Rob Holmes.
All right, Rob, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is awesome.
All right. So you do other podcasts too, right? Yourself?
Yeah, I host one called Oh the Horror. It is me basically just going through a bunch of different horror movies that I like and trying to give out recommendations and nice. Just getting people to watch more horror films.
There you go. I love horror films. I know Alfred enjoys a bunch, you know. So let's begin with Color Out of Space, which I chose this because, like, we've been doing a thing this year. We kind of changed the format a little bit because I'm out here in LA now. So I'm not at Hollywood Boulevard, but, you know, we originally called this that before I even thought about moving to Hollywood. Nice. So it's really nice that I'm out here. We changed the format so that we would talk about the movies that came out last year that we haven't chatted about yet or whatever. So we started like with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, obviously, you know, for the Hollywood stuff. And then we, you know, I would pick one, then he picked one, and then, you know, so on and so forth. And I was trying to figure out what to do. And I was like, I really want to watch this movie. I hadn't seen it yet. I really wanted to watch it. And so I was like, let's do Color Out of Space. And Alfred was like, I want you to lead on that one. I want to find out what his thoughts were on. Did you rewatch it, Alfred, or are you just going back from the first time you saw it?
Going back from the first time I saw it.
Okay. So, I want to find out. I want to dig a little bit more into that, in a little bit. So basically, Color Out of Space is an H.P. Lovecraft movie directed by Richard Stanley, who to me is most notorious for that documentary that was about him, like about how I guess he sort of like lost control of his movie and got fired of the Island of Dr. Moreau and had to sneak. Did you know about this?
I did not know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a documentary about him. I forgot what it's called, but I've seen it.
It's like Journey into Darkness or something like that.
Yeah.
Or Lost in Something.
Yeah, Lost in Something.
It deals with the whole failed Island of Dr. Moreau from, I think, 1996 with Val Kilmer and Marlon Brando, and how all of them were basically one-upping each other the entire way through, and Richard Stanley lost control and was fired off the project.
Yeah, he was fired. He, if you watch that documentary, there's a lot of, I mean, the fact that that movie even got finished was like, you know, was a surprise in a way.
Did they bring in Frankenheimer to finish that one off? John Frankenheimer, right?
Did they? I thought they brought in John Badham. Let me see real quick. Island of Dr. Moreau. It was John Frankenheimer. You're right.
That was just such a disaster because it was like Val Kilmer fighting with Brando wearing an earpiece. So it was the battle of the egos between the two of them. And that pretty much, that was like the nail in the coffin for Kilmer's career at that point. People didn't want to work with him after that.
Okay, so what the documentary and showed, which this talks about real quick, is according to rumor, which was actually like they showed it or whatever, after the studio fired original director Richard Stanley, he convinced the makeup crew to turn him into one of the background mutants so that he could keep tabs on the making of his dream project. He supposedly did not unmask himself until the rap party. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
I did not know that. That is awesome.
That was a big part of it too. Like, I just really love I loved it because like he really wanted to see what was going on. So he was still on the island. Everybody thought he left. And so he was sticking around. And I mean, I know this isn't a Island of Dr. Moreau episode, but I do love hearing that like Marlon Brando was so obnoxious on that set that he wanted a hat made out of peacock feathers because he demanded things that he knew, like he was like, there'd be no way they'd be able to do this, right? That they would just say, you know, okay, we're just not going to have him. Like, I think he wanted to be fired because Richard Stanley was fired because like he signed on because I believe Marlon Brando was a fan of Richard Stanley's first film, Hardware.
Hardware and then Dust Devil as well.
Dust Devil, yeah. So he's a big fan of those, so he wanted to work with them. And then so he asked for a hat made of peacock feathers, and they're like, how the hell are we gonna get this? And so the crew was like walking around one day and actually found a peacock on the ground, like a dead peacock. So they just plucked the feathers out and made a hat out of it and gave it to him, and he was like, damn it. You know, like...
Doesn't he wear a colander at some point, like a metal colander on his head, just because it was part of his thing?
It's been forever since
I think
I've seen
it. I don't even remember. It was... The whole thing is just insane.
It was. Remember the South Park episode that made fun of it.
Right.
What the hell is that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, Richard Stanley had directed maybe a few other things after that, but like... I think he left the business for so long because he had such a distaste for the way that Hollywood treated him. Then along comes this movie, Color Out of Space. And it is, I mean, if anything, it is one of the most beautifully shot films that I've ever seen. I mean, the colors, like a movie called Color Out of Space. I was like, it better be colorful, you know, of a film. And I was shocked and amazed how beautiful it was. It definitely with all the colors. And then, you know, it's got Nick Cage being Nick Cage, you know, like his cagiest, which at first I was sort of surprised because he seemed mellow. And yeah. I was like, is this what's going to happen? Is this how he's going to be? And then he has some lines in the movie that I'm just like, shaking my head going, that's Nick Cage, you know, like just perfect for him.
It was a good descent into madness, you know.
Exactly. I agree that was the best way to describe it. So to begin with, Rob, you're a like H.P. Lovecraft fanatic, right? Like
not a fanatic. I mean, I like cosmic horror. I think that some of Lovecraft's stories, I like some of the interpretations that have been done. I think some of his short stories were good. Not my favorite writer at all, but I love the idea of cosmic horror, and I love the idea of these otherworldly creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I really enjoyed the creature effects in it. Alfred, are you a H.P. Lovecraft fan?
Yeah, I am. I read him a lot when I was in college, and then I just kind of got off the, you know, onto other things. But At the Mountains of Madness grabbed me, and I really loved that and some of his other short stories. But the thing is, they're so visually assaulting your senses in letters. Trying to capture that on film has been so difficult, and I think this is the first time they actually got it.
For Color Out of Space, yeah, I definitely think it's the first time they got it right, yeah.
Well, I, you know, it's sort of so funny because, like, one of my really close friends, unfortunately, she could not be here on the show because she's got rehearsal herself. But she, this is like her, that was her favorite story. And I don't think she's even gotten a chance to see this because when this came out in the theaters was when I moved out to LA. So, like, you know, in January, February-ish. And so I wanted to see it, but I just never, got off my butt and went to see it. Cause I probably would have had to go by myself because there wasn't that many people that, you know, wanted it, you know, like they would want to watch this. I don't know. I really like watching it on Shudder. Cause Shudder has it now. I mean, it's awesome. Like it's great to have it on there. So if you haven't seen it yet, well, stop listening to this podcast right now because we're probably going to spoil the shit out of it. But
yes, we are.
And go see it. So and watch it on Shudder. Shudder's like $5 a month. Like I don't understand people that are like, oh, I can't afford Shudder. I'm like, you don't have $5 extra you can spend for like quality horror films. Like that's how
you know. Even if they have a free promo for a month, take advantage of it. There's hundreds of horror movies on there. Joe Bob's on there. If you like Joe Bob Briggs, he's on there with The Last Drive-In. Just get it. It's fantastic. It's where I find a lot of really awesome horror that would normally go under the radar.
Yeah, definitely. And they're getting new stuff like every day almost, it seems, you know, at least every week. Something new is popping up there. So Shudder's definitely, and I'm not sponsored by Shudder, but I wish I was. So if Shudder, you want to sponsor us, feel free because we'll plug the hell out of you guys.
Hashtag more. Shudder.
Yeah, hashtag Shudder. But no, I love those guys. I'm always promoting them and I'm always checking out their works because, I mean, it's awesome. So for $5, you know, why not? If you're into horror like we are. And so I guess, okay, so let's talk about the storyline, I guess. So to begin with, it starts out kind of with Lavinia. I think that's her name. Is that how you
Lavinia.
Pronounce it? Lavinia.
Yeah.
And she is doing some witchcraft to help her sick mother out. And she unfortunately stopped, I guess, you know, I don't know what she was doing, mid summoning or whatever she was doing. And she ends up chatting with the guy who's, I'm trying to remember his name. If you remember all the people's names better than I do.
Ward, because Ward. It's short for Howard. So the whole idea of Howard Phillips Lovecraft is used in this a lot. The world of H.P. Lovecraft is thrown in this. This is the most to the story any of his stuff, I think, has ever been done. It's most true to the page by having Ward, having a narrator in the beginning as Ward. That you get kind of throughout this story a little bit.
I agree.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that was short for Howard, and I didn't know that was connection. But
I think up to this point, the most Lovecraft movie was In the Mouth of Madness. I think that got close.
It was the most. I mean, the curse doesn't work. The curse is this. Is the color out of space. It's basically the 1987 Will Wheaton neutered version where it's just totally different. But it follows that same type of story. But I mean, Reanimator, you know, you got a short story a very short story that you're adapting to a feature. But yeah, this has to be the most that's just hits it.
I thought I always loved, like, Reanimator is one of my favorite horror flicks anyway. And you know, it's weird because I was never huge into Lovecraft. Like I'm not a big reader, period, you know, but I love Lovecraft movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And actually I acted in a series called the Lovecraft Chronicles. That was a series of like different shorts done by my friend John Johnson. And cool. I mine involved, I was a ghost or whatever in it. And so it was sort of fun, but it was like the idea of like, there's a Poe and there was a Lovecraft and there's like descendants of the authors who created, you know, and stuff. Now they have to defeat the different creatures that, you know, or whatever. It's a great series. I enjoy it, but if you can pick up the Blu-ray for it, I would definitely recommend definitely checking that out. But
there was one that had William Shatner's daughter in it, because my dad found, he was a big Lovecraft fan, and there's some H.P. Lovecraft film starring William Shatner's daughter, and I gotta look that one up.
I didn't even know William Shatner had a daughter.
Yeah, I didn't know she was an actress either.
Yeah, I think that was her only thing, but I don't know.
There's only a certain amount of Lovecraft movies, so that's got to be, I would say maybe it's nine, like Necronomicon.
We're gonna look it up real quick.
Yeah.
Does William Shatner's daughter talk like him? Like, you know,
I don't think so.
I would love
it's to, the color out of space.
You would have been great for the Nick Cage role, you know, because like in the Nick Cage role, he has like so many weird lines in the movie. Like he has this bit where he kind of like he would be normal most of the time. But then some lines he has when he goes into, he starts going mad, you know, it's hilarious. Like there's one part where he yells, snaps at his daughter while why don't you fuck off? And then he's like, or why don't I do you a favor and fuck off first? You know, like, or something like that.
It's great. Like, I mean, the way Nicolas Cage embodies this character is fantastic, and it's, you can see that Stanley is pulling stuff from, have you ever seen Impulse? It came out in 1981. It's Tim Matheson and Meg Tilly.
I've heard of it.
Sounds familiar.
So it deals with in a small town area, but this is like a farmland, and something is causing people to act out on their impulses. So they'll seem normal, but they're very on edge. So whatever desires they have, whether it be sexual desire or rage or whatever, they'll start acting out on it without, just on impulse instead of thinking it through. And it is a very tense film, but I feel like this kind of harkens on that a bit and pays homage to it and kind of takes that story and just pushes it further along. And it's just really, his performance is just so nuanced in this. And watching these people devolve from being in the color around, you know, or being around it for a certain amount of time is just fascinating.
Yeah, like, I liked the bits, like, I liked the stuff with the dog, you know, in it, where the dog's barking and you could tell, like, it's whatever it's doing, it's, like, enraging that dog. And then you sort of see sort of like a little bit more later what happens to all the things that get near, you know, that get near this color.
Like the alpacas.
Poor alpacas.
Yeah, I was like, whoa.
It was poor alpacas.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think all the animals, those poor animals, you know, like, you know.
Don't worry about the alpacas. Give mommy a hug. Everything will be all right.
Yeah.
that was pretty weird. Like, I mean, when they couldn't get through on the cell phones, you know, so they're not, you know, like, we just watched a movie called The Encounter, which involved alien stuff too for my day 8 of 31 Days of Horror. And in that, once again, like anytime somebody tried to use a phone or something, the phone would be scrambled. And I'm like, is this really like an alien thing? Like if aliens come down, they're going to scramble all our lines. Like
it's the whole EMP. It's all the electromagnetic pulse stuff that would happen. It's like if we had a solar flare hit us, it would fry all of our electronics or most circuits, and we'd have to start back from scratch. In that same way, with a meteor coming down and the color sending out a wave would disrupt everything. So then you would lose power, you'd lose cell phone reception, you'd lose a lot of stuff.
So have you, so, okay, Rob, have you read the, you know, the story, like Color Out of Space, the original?
Yeah, but this does, I mean, with the story, we're talking like they're not utilizing any of that stuff.
Oh, they're not?
Not like with power lines and stuff, not like with, I mean, there's the issue of like, electromagnetic is explored, but not in the way of like, so they don't have cell phones or anything like that because it's so long ago. There was
right, you know, they didn't make it a period piece either. They made it modern, so
I think that worked really well for it, though.
Yeah, it definitely did. But it was interesting that they decided to go that route. You know, like
I think budget wise, it'd be hard to do a period piece and a Lovecraft piece without a big. I think you do one way or the other. You do one really good or both poorly.
Right. No.
So this is a slight deviation, but I think you can, Alfred, and I think this is how you do it. I just did a review on Trollhunter. Trollhunter costs $3.5 million to make, right?
Right.
You could do In the Mountains of Madness in that type of style that is grandiose, but keep it where you're seeing some stuff, but not everything. And if you shoot it almost documentary style and the way that it's being done, you could get away with it and keep it kind of as a period piece. But not really, but you're filming it, but you don't need to do it as like a documentary. You
That's
just
cool.
Have it with that grain effect.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be creepier. That's like Prince of Darkness, some of the scariest scenes of that movie is the VHS scenes where they're recording with the camera and it's just like, this is so weird.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you guys are going to hate me because I didn't watch Prince of Darkness till much, you know, years later in life or whatever, sort of more recently. And mainly because I had seen like previews or like things of it and it creeped me the hell out. And as a horror filmmaker, it's really funny that like a horror filmmaker would be scared of like horror movies, but
it's got some, the idea of the other mirror, like going through the mirror into that like abyss essentially is horrifying.
But I think it honestly doesn't hold up as well today, you know, as it might have in the 80s when it was made.
It still freaks me out.
Really? It didn't freak me out. And I thought it would. And that kind of annoyed me a little bit. I'm guessing like it's really tough for, movies to creep me out. Like the only things that really creep me out are things that I truly believe in, you know, and you would think like, that movie would creep me out because I do believe like there are like demonic / Satan stuff, you know, that, you know, like whatever, but I don't know. It didn't really creep me out, but like stuff, you know, ghost stuff sometimes can creep me out because I do believe that there are ghosts, you know, and stuff. Yeah. And I'd be like, damn, if I'm alone, you know, watching one of those movies, you know, I get kind of freaked out, you know?
I wouldn't say like Prince of Darkness isn't the creepiest thing in the world. Like it's cheesy, right? It's a cheesy film when we really get down to it, but it's the way Carpenter approached the late 80s cheese. The thing that makes it effective is the mirror scene. And that's pretty much all I'll say if people haven't seen it. It's the mirror stuff that is extremely disturbing because a lot of stuff is left unsaid, but the imagery that you get in a few moments is so, to me, so iconic that it makes up for any of the faults of the film.
It's like the portal.
Yeah.
It's like the portal in Event Horizon. That was one of the scariest things in that movie.
Yes.
Once again, a movie I have not seen yet.
That's basically, it's basically H.P. Lovecraft meets Hellraiser in space.
That's a good way to put it, Rob.
Yeah.
I've heard, I know of it. I just haven't seen. And I mean, I don't know, because like when I was a kid, I grew up like scared of horror movies. So when I got to be older, you know, and I could, you know, watch them and, you know, not freak out or whatever, I started to really like watch as many as I could. And then I get really upset because, you know, like I wasn't able to watch, you know, like I guess it's better now because I'm also doing that with a friend of mine. My friend Mackenzie has never, doesn't watch horror movies. You know, she's not a horror girl. And so she was always scared. So we just showed her, Nightmare on Elm Street for the first time. And for the first time, like,
hey man, you know, I mean, I'm realizing that, you know, I thought everyone had seen everything. And I realized that's not true at all, which is fine. Which is fine. As long as people are willing to try new movies.
Yeah. Right. And I actually love watching people's expressions while, you know, especially in movies I've seen a million times, like Nightmare on Elm Street. I like looking over and seeing people's expressions and stuff and seeing how they react. But this movie I watched alone, you know, or whatever. And I mean, it didn't scare me or anything. I was more impressed by the graphics and the cool stuff, you know, and the way that they use the music. And I love Tommy Chong in it, which.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He was great. That role worked very well for him.
Well, it was very un Tommy Chong, you know, like he's usually kind of the funny, you know, sort of goofy goofball older man who likes to smoke pot. He was, but he wasn't so goofy, you know. He had to mention weed, you know, or whatever, like a couple times, because it's fucking Tommy Chong. You don't do that. But he didn't, you know,
he's a real character, though. That's the thing. Every character in this movie feels like a real person that has come from their own world. We meet Ward, but I believe Ward has a past and a backstory. He just magically doesn't appear. I believe that Lavinia and her family have a story before coming to the house. The house has its storied past, you know, being, I guess, Nicolas Cage's grandfather's or whatever, when he comes to get the property in the beginning. Like, there's history in this. And the fact that Arkham is mentioned and Miskatonic University and all these other things that are
the Necronomicon and stuff.
Necronomicon, everything's peppered through in this film. And that, I feel like it's lived in. And that to me is an important thing. And I feel like these characters are real people. I feel like they're in these real type of situations. They're acting for the most part how real people would act, given the circumstances.
Exactly. And I love that. Like I loved pretty much everything in this, like it wasn't to me, this was a really fun, enjoyable movie. I mean, I enjoyed, Nicolas Cage. I enjoyed, the mom,
Jolie Richardson, also in Event Horizon.
Oh, uh-huh.
Linked right there.
There you go. Yeah, that's crazy. You know, if she were listening to this, she'd be like, "Hey, you're talking about my other movie that I did." You know.
Well, the cool thing with this that got to me about this was, it was disturbing. I mean, it's like this alien thing. This is, you don't know what it's doing. It's doing its alien thing, but it was like this is disturbing because people are mushed together and it's like, what is it doing? But it's just fuck. This is crazy. When Lovecraft stuff is people going bananas when they see stuff they can't comprehend. That's one of his underlying themes.
I did find it interesting what they ended up doing to the mom became like this kind of dog creature thing. You know, when she's, I think that's what it was, scorpion or something. I don't know.
Well, she merged with the sun. So when the cosmic. When basically the cosmic light, the color that bursts out of this alpaca creature at one point, it kind of shoots this cosmic ray out of itself. It's a crazy scene. And she hugs her kid, and they merge together, but you don't see it right away. And that's what makes it more horrifying, is you don't see it. But then when you see them on the couch and you just see this arm just kind of sticking up and the smoke coming off, or steam, and then you start seeing bits of the reveal, it sells it very well. It's not comical. It's not goofy. It's absolutely horrifying. It is body horror taken to another level. The color is in them. It is pulsating. It's evolving. Mm-hmm. You're watching her then turn into whatever it decides it wants to turn her into, a new creature for this world that it's creating. And that's, she's now a predator. What's she going to do? She's going to survive, right? I mean, at one point he puts a shotgun to her head before any of this changes, and he doesn't kill her. But this creature is evolving. So it's like, well, I need to survive if someone's coming back. If someone comes back in here, I need to make sure I can stay alive. Mm-hmm. So what does it do? It changes.
Well, and that also makes me think about, we were talking about Reanimator earlier, but another Stuart Gordon H.P. Lovecraft movie that I absolutely adore is From Beyond. That movie has like creatures and things like that that just, I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of, it's like, I almost feel like, because unfortunately, rest in peace, Stuart Gordon, but had, Stuart Gordon would have done, like, this would have been a great movie for him to do too. Like, he would have done a great job. And I almost feel like him and Richard Stanley, like, kind of would have created a similar, like, if they both got the same idea, you know, they probably would have done almost the same sort of storyline, maybe a little bit different, but like similar, because that's what I felt like with this movie. You know, yeah, I felt like
Reanimator's got Jeffrey Combs in it, which I like.
Yeah, they should have had Jeffrey Combs in this, you know, honestly.
I mean, and From Beyond is, you know, that's another H.P. Lovecraft. So it's pulling from his own canon. So you're seeing the similarities and the influences Stuart Gordon had on a director like Richard Stanley, because you know that something had to have been pulled from there, especially with the creature design and coming up with this stuff. You have to have seen it somewhere else, because it's so unfathomable when it's written on a page, right? And when you see designs, it's people like Rob Bottin, who, you know, for The Thing, and he's taking on concepts of Lovecraftian lore and this alien creature, essentially the color out of space, because it is an alien that comes down to assimilate, and color, the color is the same thing. It's an alien that has come down to assimilate and make the world in its new image. We're seeing it in a town. We're not seeing it in the Arctic, where it could have been a totally different beast.
Yeah. So you said there was a color out of space that, that Will Wheaton was in?
Yeah, it's called The Curse. It came out in 1987.
Okay, so...
Oh, wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was already an adaptation of this story.
But there have been a bunch of them. There's a black and white color out of space that came out, I think, around 2011. Maybe it was after that. There was one, I think, in the late 90s. None of them were major hits, but they were more on the independent circuit. I think The Curse was like the biggest budget one, but that was also one of the first ones, I think.
So H.P. Lovecraft, is that like public domain, so anybody can make a H.P. Lovecraft movie?
He's from the 20s, so 75 years is public domain.
Yeah, it is now. I mean, it's at the time, I think it would pretty much hit around that time. You could get it from the H.P. Lovecraft estate, and I think that's where the H.P. Lovecraft Association made, I think they did the black and white color out of space, because they were trying to make it as close to the original
story
as they could. I haven't seen that one, so I can't really say for myself, but yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of adaptations, or at least taking the concepts of these stories, finessing it around, and then giving us something different. Like, I mean, if you look at The Mist, it's a combination of a lot of different things. It's Stephen King, but you can see Stephen King getting that inspiration from Lovecraft.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Portal that shit comes through.
I mean, he created Cosmic Horror. You know, that was the whole thing, is Lovecraft was the guy who came up with this, died poor. No one thought his work was worth anything when he was alive, But when he's dead, it's huge and people love it. You know, people thought his science fiction was just poorly written and just ridiculous and absurd at the time when it was, when he was, you know, writing. And it just sucks that it took almost the end of his career when he starts getting this recognition and then dies. But then again, the guy was a racist. So the hell with him. As far as that goes, I'm glad he didn't get famous while he was alive.
I mean, to be fair, at that time, I mean, you know, the 1920s period.
Yeah, there's some stuff. Let's put it this way. Google what he called his cat. End of story on that, because he is a terrible human being.
Okay.
He is a terrible human being. But as far as a creative mind, when it came to coming up with these this cosmic horror and being the father of that, I do like the cosmic horror. I just don't like the man.
Is that why there hasn't been a biopic on him? Is because of his personal, like his actual personal story?
Yeah, it won't be nice. It wouldn't be nice at all if they really like told who he was. And I mean, you know, Lovecraft Country does bring up the fact of that he was a vehement racist. Like he was just not a good man.
Okay, so I've heard of Lovecraft Country because I have HBO Max.
Yeah.
And I just haven't watched it yet. Do want to check it out at some point because it reminds me of like Castle Rock, you know, like the idea of like taking different storylines or whatever from Lovecraft's, you know, life or whatever his stories and mixing them. Right. Isn't that basically
this is much to, you got to see it, man. It's because I'm trying to explain anything. It deals with a lot of lineage and it's very, very well made. A couple confusing episodes where I'm a little like, "Ooh, you went the Annihilation route a little too much," but for the most part, it is very, very, very good.
I will definitely have to check it out sometime. It's so hard these days with so many freaking television shows being out and being available.
Absolutely. We have everything at our fingertips. Like, it's insane.
I know.
Paralyzed by choice.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get like that. It's like, man, do I want to watch this? I have an infinite queue, and it's like, well, this looks good, and oh.
But we've lost so many of these films, though. We've lost a lot of them that we're never going to see again, because unless they end up getting, like, a Vinegar Syndrome release or Arrow Films or any one of these other ones, we're probably never going to see them.
Yeah, well, then, and I'll tell you, that's an interesting thing that you say, because I've been told by another filmmaker that like Netflix doesn't want black and white movies. You know, nobody wants black and white movies, and so all these amazing films suffer streaming wise because, well, I mean, thank God for HBO Max and like Criterion and some of the other companies that are have streaming channels that will allow. You know, because like, you know, HBO Max does have a lot of old films for them. And, you know, you look at these things, they don't want, but Netflix doesn't want it because nobody, the generation that exists kind of now that are watching these films and everything, they don't care about black and white. You know,
which is, I mean, the thing is, people would watch it. Netflix, they don't want anything that isn't 4K. I mean, they'll put some stuff that isn't, but for the most part, requirements for them are like, it needs to be 4K. So unless you're going to restore a film that was like, you're not going to take Blood Rage, which finally they did make that, but you're not going to take Blood Rage and make a 4K like remaster of it. Like that's just not normally going to happen. And Netflix is never going to pick that up, but you'll get a company, a smaller one, to maybe say, we're going to give you a DVD or a Blu-ray release. And put a little care into it, and hopefully we can get that with a lot of other films. But we're not. Some films have degraded so much that we've lost them forever, and some people have forgotten about amazing films that hopefully we can start getting releases for.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
Blood Rage, that did come out from Arrow, I believe, right? Arrow.
I think so, yeah, because it was originally 87, and it never really, I don't know if it fully ever saw the light of day or not, originally, or it did and then was pulled. I'm not, I forget exactly how that went.
What a great Thanksgiving movie to watch.
It is.
I actually bought it. I think I have it on Arrow, my Arrow release. I bought it, and I adore that movie. It's so cheesy and so 80s. There was another one. What was the other one? What's this other movie that The Initiation? I think that's what it was called. I don't know if you guys ever saw that movie. It was not so good, but it was also by Arrow. And I was watching with my brother, who just absolutely hated it. Like he was watching it, just trashing it the whole time while we were watching it. And that starred Daphne Zuniga from so
Spaceballs was, and everything.
Yeah, it was pre Spaceballs and Melrose Place, you know, all this other stuff that she did. But yeah, anyway, so to go back to Color Out of Space, yeah, there's and we talked about Shudder, you know, and Shudder does that. Like Shudder puts out almost anything that is kind of cultish or has like that, you know, like that people would are gonna really want to watch, you know, and everything. And I'm just so glad that this came out. I don't think it was it wasn't like a Shudder like original or anything.
It's a Shudder exclusive right now.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that just means that Shudder like exclusively has it, right? Like literally is what it just means.
They have the exclusive distribution rights for however long they did their contract for. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I need to buy it on the. Actually, I was thinking about it. I need to buy it on Blu-ray at some point, or if it comes if it's out on 4K or not. I don't know. Like this is an interesting thing. So. I'd love to discuss this with you guys because you guys are both seem to be you guys are physical media guys, right? You know, for the most part.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like, what about you, Alfred? Are you a physical media guy?
I'm in transition. Like, I buy stuff that I'm going to watch constantly. I used to buy everything. Now some stuff is online, and some stuff I got a lot of discs, so a lot of DVDs and Blu-rays. So yes, yeah. I'll just say.
I'm the same way. I'm kind of transitioning to being both, you know, or whatever.
The thing I don't like about online stuff is all the bonus material usually doesn't come with it. Like the making ofs and the commentaries, which are fun to listen to.
Well, some places are putting those on there. I know Disney Plus like has a few movies that have commentary as a special feature, and I think that's freaking nice because I didn't think Disney Plus would do that at all, you know, or whatever, because I just didn't think they cared, you know. They just want your money, it seems, and they actually do seem to care and about that. And so they have like all those, they'll have bonus features that you can check out. Like you can listen to the Captain Marvel commentary or whatever and stuff. And I think that's one of the only commentary tracks or something. So, you know, the Marvel thing. So I don't know. But anyway, I love physical media, you know, like, and so I do love this commentary tracks. I love the behind the scenes, the deleted scenes. But you know, some places are doing that for streaming. I think even HBO Max has, you know, some stuff like I watched like what's that movie?
Doctor Sleep.
No, well, I did see Doctor Sleep. I watched the cut. We did that last month, and I watched Little Shop of Horrors and got to see the ending, the original ending for that film,
nice. And
which was like completely darker and fucked up, but it was nice to see those cuts. So I mean, HBO Max is doing stuff like that and trying to reel you in on like, this is what you get because you're paying like way more than you know, like a lot of these streaming things, which there are so many of them, you know, like they're starting to
consolidate a little bit. Some have to, you know. DC Universe went out because they're on HBO Max now. So it's you're going to see a lot of these smaller platforms start getting bought up into larger ones.
I was almost thinking they were going to do, and they do this sort of like for Hulu. They'll mm-hmm. have like packages where you can pay like a little less, but right. you'll get like, you know, HBO Max, you'll get a Hulu, you get this, you know, whatever. And then you'll have a package of them. So you're only like, for me, I'm doing HBO Max and Hulu together. So I'm paying yeah. like $20. So like, or something like, or maybe less.
I mean, yeah, it's a la carte. It's a la carte, but then you can get certain deals with whoever they make their own sponsored deals with. But still, Amazon has the most. When you look at like who sponsors with the most different companies where you can just get the channels with it, you're going to get the most probably on Amazon, but you're probably going to get the best deals for packages on like Hulu or something.
Right, definitely. And you know, when you go back to Disney Plus, Disney owns Hulu. So, and they own Fox. And so all these streaming yeah. channels kind of are owned by one actual company. But anyway, I just enjoyed watching this. I was kind of hoping that maybe at some point, if I do get the Blu-ray or 4K of, Color Out of Space, I would love to see if there's like a commentary track or something to understand exactly what Richard Stanley wanted to do with it, you know, exactly. Because as much as we can, you know, and I think that we sort of went on a different little tangents like we always do on the show, that there was a lot that can be taken away from this movie. You know, was there anything else that you guys like enjoyed out of the movie? Like, was there anything that you, any scenes specifically you guys were like impressed by?
I mean, the whole movie is gorgeous. It is yeah. a absolutely stunning film. The idea of using the color, I mean, it's brilliant, because if you look at the traditional color spectrum, if you just go on how we have it charted, when you get to that like magenta purple color, it goes off the spectrum. So it's the color that is out of space, and it's also coming out of space. So it's like, there's so many meanings in the title in itself, but the color in itself is so vibrant and so pronounced, and watching what it does and how it affects the environment around it. It's just, there's so much attention to detail, and it shows. So uh-huh. it's like, you can tell that yeah. Richard Stanley, even though he hadn't directed a feature in 23 years, and then I think just been doing some documentary work or some stuff like that, that he has honed his craft, and he knows what he is doing.
He didn't get fired from this movie set, you know?
No, he did not.
And he owned it, and I've heard he's actually directing the Dunwich Horror next.
Oh, wow.
So yep. He's going, you know, he's going to be the new... You know, he's going to be the new H.P. Lovecraft guy, you know, and I wonder if they'll have him on in the Lovecraft show. Like, I don't know if they'll have him as a guest director. I think that would be cool.
I think this is the Lovecraft Country is telling a different story altogether.
Right.
But what they have for that is not going to. It's going to be completely different, I think, where he's going to go with the Dunwich Horror. I think he's looking to do a trilogy. So his right. second will be the Dunwich, and then we'll see where he ends up. He might do In the Mountains of Madness, I don't know, but I think Guillermo del Toro has been circling that one forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, del Toro also likes to produce a lot of stuff and not just direct everything. So he might drop off and just produce it. And especially if, like, I'm sure he's seen Color Out of Space and he knows Richard Stanley's so freaking, like, good at this, that maybe he will. But I don't know, like, both of them are like visually stunning directors. Like, mm-hmm. So I think both of them could handle any of the Lovecraft things, because that's the thing with Lovecraft is like, it seems is like visually beautiful, you know, yeah. stuff, creatures and characters and stuff. And, Stuart Gordon doing From Beyond right after, and he also did another. He did a third, I believe.
Castle right? Freak.
The Castle Freak, but did he do one more too?
Else. Dagon. Yeah.
Dagon. Yeah, he did Dagon. Jeez. So he was the premier. But
Dagon's the Dunwich Horror mixed with a little bit of Dagon.
Right. So Yeah, so I absolutely adore all these films being made, and yeah. I can't wait to see sort of where else these things go, you know, and everything. But with that being said, we got to wrap this up now, but I just want to thank you, Rob, you know, and I'm sure Alfred wants to thank you too.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
For coming on. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to, Rob.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, I've been basically just hosting my own podcast, Oh the Horror, and that's over at holmesinvasion.podbean.com. And other than that, I've just been doing some directing, getting ready to do some directing for some short films for this upcoming 666 project. Can't tell too much, but I do have Alfred in one of them.
Nice. Are you excited about that, Alfred?
I'm definitely excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you tell us, Rob, real quick, where can we find you? Like all social media links and stuff.
So yeah, most of it's at Holmes Invasion. That's like my Instagram, Facebook, all of that stuff. Also at Oh the Horror Cast. I don't use that as much, so it's probably going to all transition over to at Holmes Invasion.
I like that name though, like Holmes Invasion, like Home Invasion. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a very cool like little pun right there. I guess that's a pun.
Yeah, yeah. It was just it was a fun thing. One of my friends brought it up to me. I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna run with that.
That's awesome.
That's great. What about you, Alfred?
I can be reached at chargedparticles.net or chargedparticles on YouTube, chargedparticles on Facebook for comedy. In my podcast, Performance Enhancing Films, where we interview performers about movies that inspired them, is it Performance Enhancing Films on Libsyn. And we're doing a pilot for a Star Trek podcast. And my friend Ted and I were going to do one called Dragon and the Crane, which is going to be a movie commentary podcast. So I got some things in the works.
Nice. You're busy too. Yeah. So is there anything else you're doing, or is that it? Or because I know you said you push comedy stuff, and
I've been casting like four of the short films for the 666 project. So I'm gonna be a busy beaver here for a little while.
Oh wow. Okay. So is it like six different directors too, or?
Yeah. Yes. Six directors, six stories, six actors.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then because they usually did, like when Rob did it last year, it was all on stage at the theater, but now Isolation, we do it, they're doing it by film.
Oh, yeah. Cool. So, oh, wait, is it like Zoom or something that you guys are doing it on there? Nope. So is it, okay, so it's a real like film thing. Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Cause I mean, right now we have no idea how like people are doing the Zoom thing a lot, you know, we're doing it right now, but like people are even doing it for films and stuff. And I feel like we're like in 2021, we're going to see like a ton of Zoom movies, you know, come out or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, people have.
I mean, Host did it really well. Host did it like that. That's like the blueprint at this point.
Yeah. And I kind of like, I'm really like shocked at how awesome some of these things are. I wasn't happy with like Saturday Night Live when they did it. I was kind of bummed out because I mean, the skits just weren't that funny to me, but what is it? But I've been watching like Josh Gad has a like a reunion thing where he does like Lord of the Rings reunion or
Princess Bride.
Did you do Princess Bride?
Yeah, they did Princess Bride.
Shit, I need to watch that. Yeah. So see, I'm like behind. I didn't even know that. I know I saw Ferris Bueller's Day Off and, you know, a couple other ones, but so that's awesome. Absolutely adore that, and the way he does that is the way I want to eventually do a lot of my stuff too, where they kind of zoom in to like where people are and, you know, and stuff and get that, because I just think it's really cool the way he does it and everything, and just gotta learn the technical aspects of all this stuff with editing. So we've got Indie Film Cafe, which is what this is on right now, Hollywood Boulevard podcast. We got one more episode for the season, and then we won't be back till March of next year. We'll be taking a little bit of a break, but then we'll be back with Joe, who will be our co-host as well. So I'm really happy about that, because Joe and I are finishing up the mainstream this month, and then so that, you know, we can focus later on Hollywood Boulevard. And we, I can announce this now because this is actually being announced on Friday, and this is coming out a week from today. So this will be out on a Wednesday. But I have a new podcast that I'm starting. That's going to be a podcast / video cast. We're going to put it up on our YouTube channel as well. And it's called Living on the B-Side. And is going to be just talking with B filmmakers, actors, crew members. Nice. And it's going to be about their more personal stuff, you know, not just about the film. I mean, there'll be a little bit of that, but more, you know, about their childhood and, you know, how they, you know, how they're dealing with today and all that fun stuff. Just trying to get more personal with a lot of these actors who and filmmakers and stuff who don't really get that chance. You know, most of the time it's just like, even for my stuff, it's usually just talking about the films that they've done and the work like that. And I kind of want to dive more into like people's psyche and other shit, you know, find out what makes people tick. And so I've decided to start that. So we're announcing that on Friday. So it'll already be announced. So thank you guys. I'm excited. There's a lot going on right now. join us also. I'm still doing the 31 days of horror, indie horror, all the way up to, Halloween. So, keep checking back with that. I've got 80s horror podcast. I've got a lot. All of them that can be found, all those shows can be found on indiefilmcafe.podbean.com. So check that out, or indiefilmcafe.reviews, which is our official website, which I want to try to get some more stuff done with that, you know. But until then, so check back. Let us know what you guys think. If you guys enjoyed Colorado Space, let us know what you guys thought about it. If you didn't enjoy it, also let us know what you thought of it, because maybe you didn't like it. I don't know. I did, but, you know, I'm kind of an easy guy and easygoing, you know, person to deal with. And you guys seem to enjoy it. So.
Oh, hell yeah. I thought it was definitely. Great. Absolutely.
It didn't seem like a movie that Alfred wanted to see again, though.
I'll watch it again. It's just some movies I can't watch over and over within a short period of time. Some movies I can. Yeah, yeah. That was like a fine meal, a rich, heavy meal that I can't go back and watch again right away, because it's like, it's just so much.
It's an experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree with that. So there you go.
Now I know what's coming, but when I don't know what's coming, it's like, whoa.
That's the review. Color out of space. It's an experience.
Yes. That should be the tagline. I would have gone to see that specifically for that tagline. It's an experience, you know. And then I would have been happy with the that, because, you know, it was sometimes you see the tagline and you're like, that's not, you know, the same, you know. Like, I don't feel that way. So thank you guys once again. Rob, you're more than welcome back on the show at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And
thanks for coming, Rob.
And we're going to promote your Oh the Horror, so people go check that out. Awesome. You said it's on holmesinvasion.podbean.com, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, awesome. So guys, check that out. Let us know what you guys think of all of this stuff. And have a great one, guys. Bye.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Hollywood Boulevard podcast.